Last time we've talked about the foundations of how to implement multiple inheritance in an actual programming language. We were looking at the internals of the LLVM compiler suite, particularly into the way that LLVM represents the data structures and the accesses to the data structures on the intermediate representation level. We have looked at the representations of heap objects and how to lay out them, how to compose them from each other, and the way that different high-level constructs are represented in these layouts, and how increasing the expressivity of the high-level constructs complicates the representation on the intermediate code side. So, as a small interlude, we have had a few insights into how to automatically arrange the hierarchy of classes, such that it's an actual linearization of parents instead of a tree of parents, or even a graph of parents. And for that, we have looked at particular linearization techniques. And for example, there was the C3 linearization, which is the by now standard of linearization, or at least it seems so. And yeah, that would have some nice properties. But we wanted to go back to the original approach, where we found that having ambiguities between parents is something that we encourage the programmer to actually resolve. And in, apart from that, we just continue with the representation we have had so far. So, let's maybe catch up. We had these diagrams with high-level code and low-level code, as well as the graphical representation of the supporting data structures. So, what we have had last time, I'm sorry, the other projector seems not to work today, so yeah, feel free to join the other side if that is a problem. I can't get it to work by the panel, just so yeah, maybe just it's a little bit closer then, yeah. So the situation from last time was that we had, instead of just single parent situations, with several parents. That is also here the case. So we have class A as a potential parent, class B as a potential parent, and class C being the common child of class A and class B. And so far we have heard that the way to represent that in terms of heap structure would be to find a particular linearization which is based on the order in which the classes are mentioned in the type expression over here, and this would mean that A has to go first, so that is reflected in the layout. We have A first, then B, and then C. What is the actual difference to the diagram before? Well, that is one small keyword, this virtual thing, which enables the dynamic dispatching in the context of C++, which means that the examples that we've seen previously were just statically dispatched. Now we will have a look at how multiple dispatching looks like. So, with the knowledge that we have so far, I have assembled a diagram for the memory representation and the virtual table, as far as we are aware of what we have to do. And let's have a look at the underlying code and what happens if we let that run on that kind of representation. So, we have little bit of high-level code over here, where we first create an object of class C, then cast it to an object of type B, well, pointed to type B, but anyway, type B, and then call a method F, which is, well, member of all of those things. So in the end, it will be overridden by class C. And this is the one that we mean to actually call. So what's happening on the intermediate code side? Remember, each of these statements is to be translated by itself. The context of these things is not particularly well treated in translating these things. The only thing that is context dependent is kind of the addresses of the variables, and apart from that, there is almost no context of where we are or what we do currently. So, first of all, there is the first instruction, which is an assignment, which is basically a cast. So, what will happen here is that the there is, well, here you see what happens if you do a practical run of a compilation. You will see that for here, by some heuristics, the compiler decided to actually use a cast to integer of 8 bits, and then chose to select by an offset of 16 of them, which is 16 bytes. And this happens to be exactly the offset that B has within the representation of C. If you look a little bit closer to that, you will probably... well, is that actually the case? C, 12 times I8, and class A... Well, this is 8 plus 4 is 12. That is actually a little bit surprising. I would have expected that to be different. I would have to double check whether the 16 is actually really... the thing here. Well, I'm not sure whether I can really give an answer to that online, but in principle, what should have happened here is that we just navigate into the area that is responsible for B, which would have to be offsetted by the length of A, which is, by all means that I know, 12. Anyway, I won't be able to solve that just by looking there, so I will have to check on that. Afterwards, we see that the type is reverted back to what it is actually meant to be and stored to be referred to later on as a pointer to B. So what we can take from that is that there actually is some kind of address modification happening here, exactly by a constant offset. We can debate what the offset actually should be, but it should be a constant at least. So going on further, what is then? Then is, well, we have said that for virtual method call, what we do is we look up the virtual table pointer, which is supposed to be by basic principle always the first slot in your memory representation, and from there on we select a particular function entry by just indexing via well-known numbering scheme, like, well, we will probably do something like set f to 1 and g to 2, f to 1 or something, and depending on which function we want to call, we just select the entry by that. So that is what is done by the code generation scheme. So what do we see here? We see that we load from the class representation of B to obtain the pointer to the virtual table, cast to a type that corresponds to the virtual table, load the content of the virtual table, and then select the, well, zero-based first entry from that, and then load the function pointer for that, and in the end, call, or issue an indirect call. So that is the common pattern that we have established for virtual method call earlier on. And at the point where this thing is translated, we don't actually know the history of how this PB came to exist. It might be that it's just two lines away, but it might be created completely somewhere else in your code, given to you via some chains of parameters from somewhere else, and who knows where this thing comes from. So you can't really say what object representation the actual one is. So it's more and more important that you have certain conventions of how to perform this virtual method call. And yeah, what's your impression? What will go wrong the way that we have designed the diagram? What is problematic? Or is that all working fine? You don't necessarily need to really parse that thing. Maybe do more like something like the think of what these things do in terms of comments. That is not particularly clear. Let's just check one by one. First one is we load from some address that we obtain out of whatever has been stored in the pointer to B. Is that something that works? Is there a problem with that? You'll point, what points to B is what we have said before. That's a pointer to over here. So we will load directly at the beginning of B. Well, that will probably do something and will load something. Then we will cast that into a pointer to functions that take this argument and some other thing. So basically, our type for the function for the virtual table, and then try to load from that. Will that do as intended? Yeah. So that is the point. Our thank you. Our access pattern actually says that in order to perform a virtual call, what we need is this convention of having the entry of a virtual table pointer at the first entry of my object representation. I have that, of course, over here for the for the representation of the complete object. But since we have introduced multiple inheritance, we have come into situations where we end up with a pointer to the innards of my object representation, particularly in the case where I cast to my second parent. And these are the cases that are the problematic ones. If I cast to my first parent, cast to A, well, then essentially nothing changes, because A begins over here, which coincides with the beginning of the representation for C anyway. So there's no change involved in that. But if I cast to my inner parent, or right-hand side parent, then I have to modify my receiver pointer, and thus come to point into somewhere in the inside of my object representation. And I have to keep in mind that my access scheme for the virtual table is always looking at the first thing in here. So, any ideas how to repair that? What would I do in order to get that right? Let's just add such a thing. Will that do? So, if I do that, then I can cast my... well, I will, of course, have my pointer point over here at the time of this line. I will cast that into the correct type in order to load from there. Then this points over there. I select the zeroth entry, which is this one, and load from there and do an actual call. All nice and well. Yeah, well, until you start executing whatever you have stored in here. So maybe let's try to recall what we have established last time for our principles of how to create code for, code that executes for method F. Whenever in such a method F I access some kind of attribute, what I was expecting is that I can somehow find my way to the particular memory representation that holds this attribute. Especially when I have my implementation of F that wants to access C, for example, what I want to do is I want to find my way to this thing. So, conceptually, what I do in order to reach that is, well, since I can have several instances this class, I can't do an absolute addressing. So I only can do a relative addressing to the start of the object. And here we go again. For this thing to work, we need to address with a constant offset from the beginning of the object representation. And since this F is an object of class C, we will perform our constant offsetting to the start of the representation of the object of type C. However, what we provide this whole thing with is something completely different. The offset of beginning of B. But we can't do anything about that, because the that is the scheme that is there in order to translate virtual method calls. That is kind of the constant in translation. I can't suddenly start to change that out of the blue, because I don't know that this is this pointer to B is actually a pointer to B in the context of C, and thus all these complications with offsetting and all that. So what's the solution to that? Well, it won't be a simple virtual table as the one that we have here before, but instead something more complicated. So, what will be in there now is we won't have one homogeneous virtual table that handles all the aspects of virtual method calls for all ways of accessing parts of the object. This means particularly whenever we have situations with multiple inheritance, where we can enter the object through different entry paths, then I need several ways of treating the method calls. And this can be done by introducing sub-tables in the virtual table. So now the virtual tables will have borderlines. These over here that will separate subtables from each other. Each of these subtable can be referred to from virtual table pointers in the respective object representation, but they may point to different entry points. So a suitable entry point would be, for example, this one or this one over here, depending on which virtual table pointer I'm coming from. What I will find in these virtual tables is several things. Of course, there will be the list of virtual function pointers that I need for actually calling the method. So this will be a list, or might even degenerate to just a singleton thing. What I will also find in there is runtime type information that informs us about what the actual object is. We are not so interested in that for this particular lecture, so that can be ignored for our purposes. What we will also find in there is... today is a particularly nice day for that. So this entry over here, you see varying numbers in there, can be zero or can be, well, known offsets of sub-objects within in a larger object. For example, this delta B, which points to the beginning of object B in C, for example. And this is called the offset to top pointer, which is, well, I introduce it here because I'm doing modifications to the layout of the virtual table now anyway, but in principle we will see later on where this is applied in actual terms of expressions where it is used. So these virtual tables are composed tables as soon as we start using multiple inheritance together with virtual function calls. Then we need to split up these things. Virtual pointers point to whatever sub-table belongs to them. And this makes sure that whenever we cast to the particular subtype, we will still point to the right handlers for the methods. If you are actually interested in what the, what compilers do in relevant situations, what you usually do is, for the in the LLVM world, you can dump the table layout in ASCII art once again for particular object structures. So if you are ever in doubt how these things actually look like, you can print out the compiler's result with this thing. So back to the actual topic, the problem that we had was the one where we got the implementation that emanated from this pointer pointing to the entry of a C object. However, going through a different route, particularly this one over here, we would call the method with a pointer in the innards of a C, particular pointer to the B part of C, which would mess up the offset-based the offset-based addressing of the attributes of such an object. So, what is the solution to that? What we can't change is the way that we create code for the function call. Otherwise, we would have to put a lot more information about the actual context of this call in, and this is something that is not doable for us. So what we do instead is we actually don't really call the method itself, but we will call some intermediate method this one over here, in case that we enter the virtual table through the pointer to the subtable for B. This is the way that we enter whenever we come from this part over here, where we only have a pointer to B and not to C. And since we have a separate table, we can modify whatever pointer we put in there. So we use this opportunity in order to not point to the original F, but instead to a manipulated one. And what is that supposed to do? Well, that is what you see over here. The principle, that is really not readable. It's a thunk. This is how this kind of, or this type of method is actually called. These are small methods that act as a trampoline to the actual method. But before the actual method is called, what will be done is the parameter, particularly the first parameter, will be modified. This won't be the pointer to B as it has been before, but instead what we do is we readjust the pointer back to its original state, pointing to C. So what we will do is we will revert to the old offset by subtracting 16 bytes from the address that we are given. This will undo the modifications to the pointer to point back to the actual beginning of the C representation, and thus re-establish a situation that we need in order to execute F, so that the that addressing the attributes is now going to the correct offsets again. Or, well, the offsets have been correct anyway, but we are offsetting to the correct base in that sense. So, once again, the 16, this might have to do something with aligning of starts of structures or anything. I have not checked why that is the case. So anyway, what we get from that is that these thunks is a concept that comes in play when we have this multiple inheritance and virtual functions. We create thunks when we have to construct a virtual subtable for the right-hand side parent of a child, like this B in C, and we will create such a small method, a trampoline. This will add a compile time constant, which corresponds to this delta B. So that is what has been done over here, and to the this pointer before it is statically calling F. So this that is this position over here, and the actual implementation of F doesn't change. It remains really the same, and will address the locals relative to this pointer that is assumed a C pointer and actually points to a C representation right now. Maybe a few words to let's keep it like that. So the question is now that we have solved how virtual tables actually work, in the general case this will work out quite fine, probably. You will be able to access the right methods. However, the situation gets complicated as soon as you start creating more advanced structures, particularly ones where you have ancestors that are repeated in your inheritance structure. So you can construct situations like these, where you have a class A, which is derived from a class L, and a class B, which is derived from the same class L. So this thing appears twice in your inheritance. Well, what has been a tree now looks like a graph. And the question that arises now is, how is that to interpret in terms of data replication and memory organization? What does that actually mean if I have a class hierarchy that now has a common ancestor? Do I keep my accompanying data that represents the object once? Or do I do that twice for each of the children, keep their own parent and separate them from each other? What would be intuitive? Who likes the separation? Who likes the joining? So, what's the way that C++ does that? Separation, of course. So, yeah. If you duplicate your base classes, at least by if you do that in the default way, then you can specify that like this. You have your common base class L, and you program your system like A inheriting from L, B inheriting from L, and C inheriting from A and B. Following the construction principles, you will arrange your memory layout in the way that you have the child as the last element of the memory representation, then you have the memory representation for B and the memory representation for A, where in the representation for L you keep your own for B you keep your own representation of L, and in the representation of A you also keep your own representation of L. So that is a default how it works when you specify it like that. What does that have as properties? Well, you might consider the code from under here, where we create an object of type C. Then we might be in a situation where we need to cast to type L due to whatever we want to do. So that is the point. Now that we have L as a common ancestor, but we keep it twice in our representation, we would need to eventually maybe modify the pointer, depending on whether we select this L or this L, but this is not given. So there we go with an ambiguity. The way out of that is also listed over here. We can tell the compiler which L we actually want to select by specifying an intermediate cast beforehand. So we can cast to A, and thus this includes the L from over here, and then it's clear which L to go. The other thing over here, for example, is you might want to point to C again and cast from an L pointer back to C. Well, similar problem that we run into. This L might be an L pointed to via this part or this part. We just don't know. This mean this casting expression would mean to perform an actual constant offset addition to the base pointer, and well, we just can't say which is the constant address, the constant offset. So we need to tell which way to cast something like this, for example. Very nice. So, if you would like to have something like this, with common bases, and share the base class thing, we can do so in C++ also. But that's just not the default behavior. Instead, what we do is we specify... Oh, wow. This must be fun to rewatch. Yeah, this one's here for you. Yeah. So, virtual. You specify this inheritance relation as virtual. That looks like this in code form. So you add keyword virtual. And this makes the inheritance of V or W from A a virtual inheritance, which means that whenever another instance of V is or W is inherited from virtually, then the representation is actually joined. This now makes layouting the object representation a little bit more interesting. Why is that? Well, the core principle still remains the same. So for C, we will keep the parents in the order of how they are specified as prefixes. So A and B will be kept over here. But now A and B inherit both from W, which means that they share their parents' representation. Originally, we said that parents' representations are kept as predecessors in memory, directly before their children. So, if we wanted to do something like that, for A, for example, we would have to keep the W representation over here. However, we would have to do the same for B. So, we would have to insert space for W in there. However, we have to share both of the instances, so either way, we're screwed. We won't be able to keep it that way. So, as soon as we start using virtual inheritance, this core principle changes, and we won't put the parent in, directly in front there, but instead, somewhere else. In our case, we find that this W is put over here, underneath the C, for example. It is not. It will not necessarily remain there for all eternity. We will see examples where this W will be found not underneath C, depending on whatever happens around. And we will see an example of how that happens to be. So what we have to take from that is that from now on, as soon as we have virtual parents, we will to directly access the attributes stored in this parent as a constant offset from my object's representation anymore. Instead, what will be done is something different. We will have to keep offsets to the parent or to the virtual base somewhere where we can access it so that the method is able to compute wherever the virtual base is actually located in memory. How do we do that? For that, we once again manipulate the way that the virtual table looks like, such that for W, for example, W is a virtual parent of A. So in A's virtual subtable, we add another field over here, which is located at a constant offset to wherever the virtual table pointer points to, particularly three fields behind the point where the virtual table is pointed to. And this gives us the with delta W the offset of the beginning of the virtual base relative to the beginning of the surrounding object. So this delta W is referring to this. So in order to access an attribute W from A, what you usually do is you dereference the virtual table pointer, you add an offset in order to access the virtual base offset, pull that in the local variable or something, and add a constant offset to that and this pointer of your object in order to reach the address of the attribute. So as soon as you start sharing base classes, you will get a lot of computations as soon as you decide to access attributes from your base class. Okay, so I promised you examples where the location of the W representation would be non-constant anymore. So let's have a look at the example. So this is the same example that you had beforehand, at least if you look at that part. That is still object A, class A, class B, class C, with A and B virtually inheriting from W and C inheriting from A and B. So far, this whole thing would be represented like this. And there will be instances of C objects that will be layered like this. But at some point, you might run into an additional class definition of class D, which inherits from C and B again. And remember, B also inherits from W. But we will share the common ancestor. And in order to represent that, we need to represent D with its parents C and B. So B and C, they need to follow each other directly, since they are parents of the current object B. So I don't have space to put W directly following C. So what I will do is I will shift it around and move it to the bottom of my representation and instead continue with B and D. So without meddling with classes A, B, C, and W, I got a layout where the addressing scheme for my attributes here changed. Yeah. Also, what will happen is maybe look at this example over here. We now create a C, then cast down to a pointer to W, and this can be done. If I have my representation of C, I exactly know where know how to access this W. I can look up the virtual table's parent and can look inside of that. Well, I don't even need to. In C, I know that I will cast down to V by adding some constant. Then I want to cast back to C. However, with having also an implementation that not implementation, specification of D, where C is now in a different position relative to W. Here at this cast, I would have to come up with some constant value of how to adapt the pointer in order to point to a C now. But now, since the position of W is not constant anymore relative to where the C object started, well, this is a problem now. I can't find any constant that will be valid for both of these cases over here. So this will not work anymore. Instead, what you can do is you can use this concept of a dynamic cast, which is a thing that actually evaluates the pointer to the top of the enclosing object. So this thing, instead of adding an actual constant, will do the actual lookup and then perform the necessary adaptations to your pointer. So static casting is not possible in that case anymore. But again, let's have a deeper look into the details of that. So we had the issue of when I cast to some subtype of my object, for example, in this examples before, when I cast to this B object, I had to create a particular subtable of my virtual table where I stored a thunk that would adapt the this pointer that I'm given as my first parameter by adding a constant in order to reach the top of the object in order to actually execute the underlying function f that was specified with a C object in mind. Now that I have a virtual base class, I might end up having a pointer that points to my virtual base class. If you look back at how this is realized, you see that this still means that I keep a pointer to a virtual table, and the pointer to the virtual table is still a separate subtable to the one before. So if I do like that, that should be fine. I can also put in thunks in order to perform the necessary readaptation of my this pointer in order to reach the correct top of the object. Or do I? When I find myself in implementing a thunk for my W, what I have to essentially do is I have to somehow reach the top of the object representation emanating from a pointer to my W. So I usually end up with a pointer pointing to there, and what I need to do is I need to add a constant in order to reach my top of the object. But I might have also reached the pointer to here. And here, the pointer to the top of the object would actually mean that I have a larger offset. So what that means is that in case of a virtual base class, I can't add a constant anymore in order to reach my my enclosing object. But that's bad, because I need to provide the implementation of f that emanates from a C object with an actual pointer to a C. How can I do that? Well, I can't use the old plain thunks that I have used before anymore, but instead I have to use something different called a virtual thunk, which not adapts this pointer with constant anymore, but instead with a variable value. Where do I get this value from? Well, when I have to do something specifically for a particular subtype that I have reached, or parent type that I have reached through casting, I usually store supplemental information in the virtual table, and that's what's actually done over here. So that's how the virtual table looks instead of the one that we have seen before. So the virtual table for the virtually inherited parent W now not only contains a pointer to the top and pointers to functions that represent most recent overridden versions of my known virtual functions, and not even thanks to these things, but virtual thanks that are implemented in a way that they themselves access the W part of the virtual table and look up so-called virtual call offsets in this part of the virtual table. And these virtual call offset represents the offset that the this pointer has to be adjusted in order to reach the according start of the object when starting from the object representation of F. So you see, for calling the implementation of F that stems from A, what I need to provide is the offset from A to the representation of W, so this span over here, which is this, well, this delta W minus delta A, so this this line over here. So this gives that offset. So delta A is essentially zero because it is right at the start of the object representation anyway, but I keep it here for in order for you to see the systematics behind that. So yeah, this is delta V, delta W minus A. Then if I want to if I'm interested in calling G, for example, the my most recent overridden version of G is within B, but this expects a reference to B as it's this thing. So what actually needs to be reached is the offset from here to this in order to adapt my this pointer. So what I'm giving it is delta W minus delta B. And same goes for this thing over here. This is an implementation of H within C, which means that it needs to obtain a C pointer. So that's what I'm giving it. Delta W minus position of C within my general object layout, and well, for C, C is essentially the same as delta A, which is zero, so again we will have this offset because delta C will be just zero. And you see me coloring those offsets in a similar way as I have colored the entries for the virtual methods. That's by intention, because you use the same index that you have used for accessing the slots in the virtual functions list for accessing the slots in the virtual call offsets list, but just in reverse direction. So your index of your method goes in this direction if you access virtual function calls, and in this direction if you want to obtain the according virtual call offsets. So this minus 32 is the entry belonging to the G within this thing, which means that you have to accommodate for this RTTY, which is a particular length, this offset to top, which is stored just one slot before, and then you go two slots further in order to reach this. So this 32 is 1, 2, 3, 4 times machine word length earlier than my entry point into the virtual table. So that's why there's 32 times 1 size of a byte. Okay, apart from that, everything that works here is just load G's recall offset, and address relative to that in the I think this is how, so you take your pointer to B and address relative to whatever you have obtained in there in order to reach the according part where to go for, which would be this B thing, and then call statically the method with the newly adapted pointer to B. So, well, that is what the virtual thunk does. So you see these diagrams can become arbitrarily complicated depending on how the source code looked like. So the new components in there is that, you maybe have not paid attention, but we have on top of the offset to top, now also the offset to the virtual base pointer, which is this thing. With that, you can get we can compute the pointer to your virtual base. What you also is added newly to the virtual table, at least for a virtual base, is now virtual call offsets that belong to the list of virtual function pointers and are ordered in reverse, so that you can just access these slots with the same index as the one that you have used over there, just negative, and with a few management slots in between. Apart from that, there's still this runtime type information pointer and the usual offset to the top of the object. Yeah, so that's what virtual thunks are. So, that is kind of hopefully all of the comments that you will run into when you start providing a system for multiple inheritance, the way that C++ does that. So to sum up what is happening there is that there's work done by the compiler. The compiler will generate one code block implementing whatever each method does, and it provides only one implementation for each of these things, at least at first. There might be optimization phases after coming after that, but in principle that's just the concept of creating one implementation for each method. Then there, what the compiler also generates is a virtual table for each composition of classes, depending on how your inheritance expressions are looking like, which will refer to the most recent overridden versions of methods of common signature. That's, how the single dispatching usually works. But there might be the necessity for subtables due to these effects that we have seen that happen whenever we start casting to parents in multiple inheritance. And for that, what the compiler also generates will be thunks and virtual thunks that will adapt this pointer of the method depending on the position in the object representation and whether it's a virtual thing or not. You will have adaptations with a constant or a dynamically or a dynamic value that is found as an entry in the subtable corresponding to that object representation. What will happen at runtime is that at program startup, the virtual tables are created once globally by just copying them in known memory spaces. Then when an object is created, it will first be allocated, meaning that there will be memory reserved for each of these objects. The constructor is usually made in a way that apart from initializing the object's attributes, it will also store pointers to the virtual table or the subtables within each object's representation. So this establishing virtual tables is kind of a one-time effort at program start. And as soon as you start creating these objects, it will just be a matter of, well, writing a few memory cells with the correct virtual table. Also, that means that the virtual tables will be shared throughout all the instances of the same classes, and the object representations themselves will not. They will be allocated separately from each other at runtime, depending on how often and whenever object is created. The method calls can then be translated without paying attention to the actual context of the creation where and the identity of the object. There's just fixed patterns of how to translate static calls and dynamic calls. Each of them are independent of the actual identity of the object underneath and the relevant adaptations to the this pointers will be done either following the standard protocol as it is for dynamic dispatch, for example. There might be some kind of adaptation of this pointer which might be reverted later on when the call then reaches a thunk, which will readapt the point back to what it has been before, maybe. So, that is how the system works, and it's just a time kind of distribution of the workload on the compiler and the runtime. Yeah, so all in all, you've seen what the approach for the multiple inheritance looks like if you are allowing multiple inheritance also for implementations, which is a nice thing, in the sense that it removes certain restrictions on how many parents you can actually use in inheritance and might be quite convenient compared to the loopholes that we have to jump through in order to circumvent the restriction of only having one parent, but of course you buy yourself into this diamond pattern problems, and but these are problems that we discuss a lot about because these are corner cases where things can break. However, in practical systems you might not find that these diamond patterns occur as frequent as the discussions may indicate. However, the other approach to this topic is the one that you see in the languages like Java or C Sharp, where the only multiple inheritance that is allowed is interface inheritance, which means that there is no implementation inheritance involved. And when that is not the case, you can imagine that there is just no, there's a whole lot of implementation effort just crumbling into, well, no work at all. There's no adaptations of pointers in order to cast to parents. Instead, we will always keep the pointer to the beginning of the object. You don't need to split cases between entering the object from somewhere in the innards, or some, or whether you come through the complete objects pointer. So the implementation is much simpler if you just allow to inherit from multiple interfaces. Yeah, well, that is something that I'm not so keen about. That is an aspect for software engineers. So there's lively discussions about how full multiple inheritance is actually bad design and how you should not do that. But that is maybe a topic for software engineering and not for compiler construction. We're more like the people who do the job to actually make it work. So you can think of that as you want. So what are the lessons learned from this thing? There's different purposes for inheritance. Well, there's this notion of interface inheritance and implementation inheritance. You have seen how heap layouts of objects are constructed piece by piece, can be composed in the example of C++. You've seen how virtual tables are layouted. You've seen how basic access patterns in order to dispatch to methods look like in the case of LLVM and its intermediate representation. You have seen linearization as an alternative to explicit disambiguation, and seen the state of the art in this section, and a few pitfalls of multiple inheritance, meaning very, very complicated designs of how to implement particular features of multiple inheritance. Maybe a side note for the people who come from the Windows side to this problem. You might also find that the memory layout of objects is somewhat familiar to the layout that you have seen over here. However, it's a little bit different in details. Particular that the virtual tables are somehow split up into several smaller tables that are in that sense not connected, and the virtual base pointer, for example, is kept in the object representation as opposed to being kept as a pointer offset in the virtual table. But apart from that, the general core ideas of how to organize virtual method call with these virtual tables is probably pretty similar if you look into that. If you're more into details of how the systems work and where to get more information, you can have a look at these few references over here. So with that, I'm done with the topic of multiple inheritance. Is there any question left on this particular part?